I'll invite you, if you're able, to stand for the reading of the gospel this morning. It's found in Mark. The traditional story of Palm Sunday as told from this gospel writer. When they were approaching Jerusalem at Bethphage and Bethany near the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples and said to them, "Go into the village ahead of you, and immediately there, as you enter it, you will find there a colt that has never been ridden before. Untie it and bring it. If anyone says to you, 'Why are you doing this?' just simply say, 'The Lord needs it,' and we'll send it back here immediately." They went away and found a colt tied near a door outside in the street, and as they were untying it, some of the bystanders said, "What are you doing untying the colt?" And they said what Jesus had told them, and they allowed them to take it. They brought the colt to Jesus, and they threw their cloaks on it, and he sat on it. Many people spread their cloaks on the road, and others cut leafy branches that they had cut from the fields. And those who went ahead of them followed and shouted, "Hosanna! Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the coming kingdom of our ancestor David. Hosanna in the highest." And then he entered the city of Jerusalem and went into the temple, and there he looked around at everything. Grass will wither, flowers will fade away, but the word of the Lord, it will live on forever and ever. Thank you. You may be seated. The story recorded in each of the four Gospels begins with Jesus just a couple of miles outside east of the city of Jerusalem, marking the beginning of the very last week of his earthly life. Passover was about to occur, and it was a tense time in first century Jerusalem under Roman-occupied rule. The festival, of course, remembers God's deliverance and exodus and liberation of the Jewish people from Egyptian rule so many years before. And now every year at Passover, under Roman rule, Rome sends its own power to remind the gathering crowds as the city swells to more than five times its population, to remind them that they belong to Rome, that they will be loyal, obedient, and submissive. Historians tell us that Rome in general, Pontius Pilate in particular, come into the city from the western side. They come to keep what's called Pax Romana, which means the peace of Rome. It's sort of ironic they don't keep peace by peace, but through terror and bloodshed. So then, on that day, to reinforce the values of Rome, soldiers come from the west, led by its governor, Pilate, decked in armor, carrying weapons, banners, and flags, and parades into the city from the west, quote, according to Josephus, an ancient historian, draped in the gaudy, glory, imperial power of Rome, horses, chariots, gleaming armor. Pilate rides with force to represent a watchful eye. As this Roman commander clangs and crashes and bangs his way into Jerusalem from the west, there is another king that's about now to ride from the east. He tells a couple of buddies to go hail himself a goofy-looking animal known not only as a donkey, but the foal of a donkey, a baby, still nursing, never yet ridden. G.K. Chesterton says, Jesus asks his pals to find the tattered outlaw of the earth, of ancient crooked will, starved, beaten, derided, dumb, and ridiculous looking. He calls this horse that really isn't a horse at all, but the joke of one, an absurd and unreasonable, maligned animal with errant wings for ears, the devil's walking parody. Imagine Jesus now as a full-grown man, not stepping into a limo or striding a war horse, but getting on this ridiculous little scooter of an animal. One historian said he probably had to lift his knees so that his feet didn't drag in the dust. It seems like a joke until you see a ragtag line of peasants, fishermen, prostitutes, healed lepers, and recently raised people from the dead starting to throw down palm branches before him in a sort of poor person's ticker tape parade. And now you've got a joke of a scene. Our God leads an anti-imperial pageant designed to mock the obscene pomp and circumstance of this world. And when one encounters the mercy and gentleness and the meekness of God, not showing himself, it shatters the illusion of all the manipulation that this world has upon us. God's power, Jesus seems to be whispering through this parade, is a different sort of power altogether. His goodness makes all other goods look pale. His light exposes our darkness and lies. His humility reduces the pride of those who might be impressed with Rome. Does anyone understand what's happening here as it happens? Why would he jump on a stupid little animal, still yet nursing and wild? Was he telling him that his kingship, too, would be a new and uncharted one? That now there would be an introduction of love and forgiveness and vulnerability and meekness that would change the world and turn it upside down? The people, though, they wanted and expected some world-altering end to evil and oppression. I do. We want an ending to the story worthy of our worship and their fake idolatry and their boastful way to pressure truth and force their human way with their dusty cloaks and cut down palm branches now meets the parody of a king who rides to cleanse not only a physical temple, but the temple of our own hearts and lives. Down Jesus rides into Jerusalem. He descends into greatness, unarmed, weak, vulnerable, apparently, and cloaked in love. Jesus comes. He mocks the way that we fight with each other and battle over our little petty political systems and force our ways upon those whom we call our loved ones. He mocks churches that want to be Republican or Democrat and screen people at the door about what they believe before they can come to this place. Jesus descends into the depth of our own sin and false expectations and mocks our sense of success and how the world measures the worth of his own children. He pauses only to weep over the city of Jerusalem and said, if only they could have known, they would have had peace that would have permeated their lives. Christ comes not to conquer and vanquish political systems, but he comes to make the inhumane human. He comes to make a slob de-slobbed. He comes to make us look in the mirror and see what we've become when we trust in systems beyond the mercy and grace and love of God. He comes as an anti-superhero that frees us from oppressive expectations of Facebook and Twitter and TikTok and all the other junk that seems to say, this is what makes you valid. Down he rides, down into the depth of our own human misery with love. Into a world where might makes right, Jesus offers a new way, looking like a ridiculous clown, where the meek would inherit the earth, where lovers and poets and children should be followed, where engineers and preachers and lawyers ought to just be quiet some days. Jesus never preaches. He simply dances to the will of God. And those who dare to hear him begin to dance with them as they overhear the music of Palm Sunday. A kingdom where a child lays down with a serpent, and weapons one day will be pounded into instruments of healing, where the poor matter and the sick are visited, and the imprisoned are remembered, and the naked are clothed, and the children who have no mom and dad will be taken to camp and mentored and celebrated and loved. In the presence of Christ's integrity, my own pretense is exposed. In the presence of his own constancy, my own cowardice is brought to light. In the presence of his own fierce love for God and us, the hardness of our own hearts is revealed. And so he rides into the shallow and yet sort of lovely calls of his people to save. Jesus rides, and still he does. I always think as a person receives something of the real thing and begins to grow in following Christ, something not just magical but mysterious begins to happen. One starts to see other people as people. One starts to see themselves not to be served but to serve and to give their own lives away for the healing of God's world. And we become aware then that God is aware. And those of us who ever, hardly ever thought of God begin in our everyday to think of nothing else. Jesus rescues us not through his splendor, but through his suffering. He comes to save the people, not with his power over them, but his vulnerability inside of them. Through his own willingness and determination never to waver who God has called him to be and how he would call him to love us, even us, it would lead him to a cross where he would set his face towards Jerusalem like flint, and there he would ride. He would purify and wash the temple with his own frustration over the greed and impulse of religious communities. He would bear the sins of the whole world in order to cleanse the temple of our own lives. This king relinquishes his rightful throne and plunging, sinking, drooping on a donkey down into the horrible mess of this world in order to pull it up with those whose love might be returned to him for who he really is. We use so many shields to protect ourselves against the dangers of real love. The coverings that we wear to face the everyday world is both the way we indeed wish to be seen and our defense against the weather. And on that day, they laid them down and hailed him as king, as we today now lay down the covering of our own pretense and welcome this God who sees. Deep into the temple of our own lives, Hosanna, we cry. Hosanna to the Son of David. And in the way the children laid down potential weapons that could have been brought downstairs, we lay down now our own weapons as we come to this table and acknowledge ourselves as grateful and claimed children of Christ, freed to know purity, released to know love, washed and cleansed and rinsed to be rid of the world's expectations and mess. What if God could bring back our innocence? What if a moment, just a millimoment of this morning might bring rescue to you and me? Paul writes, Christ loved his people and gave himself for them in such a way to cleanse them and make them holy by the washing of water and word and by the cleansing of his own blood. Come today as we gather to this table, all of you, church member or no, and welcome this one who aches to clean and wash and cleanse away that which has stuck to us from our everyday. I'll close with this. I'm sort of hooked on the Grand Canyon. Those of you who know me know that. I think I've hiked every trail down to the river from north and south, maintained and on. My very first time, I hiked from the north down to the bottom to the south rim, touched back down and up. It's called the rim to rim to rim. And I hadn't realized in my aging years how hard it was to go downhill for 16 miles down thousands of feet into that hole. And at the bottom, and I hadn't planned this well in July, I hadn't known how hot and arid that 104-degree temperature would feel. After a 16-mile day, I dropped my pack, The Bright Angel Creek, which flows into the Colorado, washes down a series of gentle falls, and there was no shower there. I thought before I climb into a sleeping hole with donkey grime on me and the silt of that canyon, I would just lay down in that creek. And as it started to touch the top of my head, that bright angel, and it creeped its way down over my face and across my shoulders and down my legs and into my grimy toes, I found in that space I wasn't wet. I was washed. There was sort of this refreshing new sense of vibrancy that felt deeper and more powerful than just a normal bath. It reminded me and felt like that very first time I said to this King of Kings, if this isn't a joke, you might have me. You might ride into my heart and wash me and make me clean and new again. Come, you children of God who hail him in this way and delight in the cleansing of not only the building of institutions and realms as people choose to follow him, but our very own heart space.